This free program is paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a member, think about joining with us to help keep free speech alive.
Live coverage of the historic Winter Soldier event. Again, tune in March 24th through 28th, noon to 1 p.m., for the best of coverage from perhaps the most important anti-war event in the United States in decades. KPFT Houston.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT in Houston. And now, Houston's only primetime radio program dedicated to news and concerns of the lesbian, gay, and transgender identity. This is Queer Voices.
Good evening, this is Jack Belinsky.
And Jennifer Renee.
Deborah Bell.
Glenn Holt.
Brian Y with the Y.
And Brian with an I is here as well. Tonight on This Way Out, the untortured tale of a Texas sissy in Memoirs of a Beautiful Boy. Activists out and Oklahomophobes hate speech, and Ellen the Gay One responds. In other news, Spanish elections reaffirm marriage equality politics, and prostitutes bring down Italy's Prodi and New York's Spitzer. Norway proposes marriage equality. Venezuela's high court says no and yes to same-gender couples. And Britain takes another look at a gay Iranian refugee. These stories and more this week on This Way Out. And but first, we have we're gonna bring Joan on when she calls in. So
we don't have her on the line.
We don't have her on yet.
And what else is going to be on the show tonight?
Oh, good question.
Well, we're going to try something a little bit different. We don't usually do this, but in the second part of this hour, we're going to open up the phones and have an open forum discussion. So if you want to talk about anything that's GLBT related, you're welcome to call in.
Yeah, please, listeners to Interchange, do not be calling if you are wanting to talk about what they discussed on that program, because we were not privy to the entire program and we can't talk intelligently about it. So keep it to things pertinent to Queer Voices.
Well, that's assuming we can talk about it, anything intelligently.
Well, yes, really.
But if you want to call in, it's 713-526-5738.
But don't do that until about 8:30. And Joan is going to be talking with Nancy Politkoff, author of Beyond Straight and Gay Marriage, Valuing All Families Under the Law. We are going to have Brian Levinka reporting on what is in store for Jungle Fever, which is Easter weekend. And with him will be Billy Underwood, the vice president of the Bayou City Boys Club, the group that sponsors the event. And, of course, we'll have news wrap from This Way Out and the rest of This Way Out.
Mm-hmm. Which is what Glenn just talked about a little bit earlier.
Yes.
Right.
And he was describing some of the things on there tonight. Yes.
That's right. And Joan is on the line.
Yay, Joan.
Hello, Joan.
Hey.
Yeah. So what are things there like there in Iowa now? You said all the snow's gone, right?
Most of the snow's gone. It's getting warmer. It's spring. Trees are starting to bloom, all that good stuff. So it's getting pretty out here. Planning a trip up to my most favorite bookstore in the world, which is called A Room of One's Own. It's one of the few lesbian bookstores left in the country, and that is in Madison, and I'm going up there this weekend. And I'm hoping at that time to get my copy of Full Frontal Feminism, since we'll be talking with the author of that book, Jessica Valenti, on March 31st.
Okay, and you have guest tonight?
Yes, tonight is Nancy Politkoff, and she is the author of Beyond Straight and Gay Marriage, Valuing All Families Under the Law. It is a book in which she makes a compelling argument that in order for the law to be fair and equal to everyone, our entire concept of families has to change. So it's interesting.
Okay, and have you already got her on the line, or is that something we're supposed to do?
That's something you're supposed to do.
Okay, well, tell you what, we'll play a piece of music and make that happen.
Okay, I have her number.
Okay.
I played with my Barbie when I was a kid. It sure was the most fun thing that I ever did. But when Daddy found out, boy, he flipped his lid. I should have been born a girl. My Daddy, he said, are you my daughter or son? And I said, oh, Daddy, do I have to pick one? Then I'll be your daughter. It's so much more fun. I should have been born a girl. You have to understand, I have a feminine side. And feeling soft and pretty isn't something to hide. I like wearing makeup, it covers my flaws. I go get a facial to close up my pores. I dress as a woman, I do it because I should have been born a girl. Although I'm a fella, I carry a purse. I don't get my period, but something much worse. Too much testosterone is really the curse. I should have been born a girl. So who am I? I often sit and wonder. Did nature make a terrible blunder? I just got a letter. I read it and wow, I've just been accepted as a member of NOW. Although I'm a fella, I joined anyhow. I should have been born a girl. Well, I think I have the answer, so that when I get home, I'll look through all the want ads for an X chromosome. I'd love to be female, think I'll give it a whirl. I should have been born a girl.
That was Miss Kooky, I Should Have Been Born a Girl, and thanks to JD for supplying us with fresh music, because we've already played through most of what he supplied to us before. But we're going to, I think we have Joan and Guest arranged now. So, Joan, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Okay, and Guest, are you there?
Yes.
Good, there you go. Okay.
Okay.
Go ahead, Joan. Oh, and Joan, you've got lots of time, so, you know, just take your time with this one.
Okay, great. We have a lot to talk about.
Great.
So I'm speaking with Nancy D. Polakoff, and she is the author of Beyond Straight and Gay Marriage, Valuing All Families Under the Law. And I want to start, Nancy, by asking you, what made you decide that this was kind of something that you needed to write about? Because it's a little off the beaten path when you think about it.
Well, I guess I have a couple of ways of answering that. One is, for me, it wasn't really off the beaten path because I have been working on issues involving gay and lesbian families since the early 1970s, and early on it was very well understood in the gay rights movement that the movement for gay and lesbian families was just one part of a movement in support of diverse family structures. And essentially, marriage was part of the problem, not part of the solution at the time. So I've always thought of families in a very expansive way. And then I guess my second answer is that I discovered that a generation of young adults have grown up thinking that the only issue for gay and lesbian families in terms of fairness and justice was access to marriage, and that the only thing wrong with marriage was that gay and lesbian couples couldn't do it. And they had no sense of a broader social justice movement to support the needs that all families have for economic security, respect, emotional peace of mind. So I was trying to reclaim that and encourage people to think about families in a more expansive and more realistic way.
And I have to say, because I was surprised myself to read certain things, for instance, that I guess I would say back in the like late 60s, early 70s, you talked about how the only children recognized as legitimate were children of the wife or the husband, and there was all kind of strange things around the definition of and of what constituted a family. For instance, it was not uncommon if two people, even if they had lived together for years and had children together, if they were not married and one parent died, the children would just be taken from the other parent.
Well, yes, because that wasn't even recognized. Almost all of history, until very recently, a man had no legal relationship to children unless they were born to his wife. So if a woman died, their father didn't have any relationship to them because he wasn't their father legally. And I cannot really overstate the dramatic change in the law when the law stopped making marriage the dividing line between children who mattered and children who didn't matter. And so really, I mean, part of that is that I'm just arguing for a further extension of what the law started doing during that period of time. I don't want marriage to be the dividing line between families and relationships that count and families and relationships that don't, whose needs can be ignored.
Well, I found it interesting, too, that in some of these cases, people wanted to stick with the way the law was, even though they acknowledged it was not necessarily the best path, because it was just easier than trying to figure out something new. And I wonder how much of that could even be applied today to different types of families. You know, is it just easier to say, well, this is the way it's always been, and I don't really want to deal with it?
Well, I think there is something to that, and certainly it was a lot easier to tell what children a man was responsible for if they were only the children born to the woman he was married to. It was a lot easier when the husband had the absolute right to decide where a family was going to live, how they spent their money, what the names of the children were going to be. So, sure, it was easier to do things that way. It was just a lot less just. And so I'm trying to, you know, reinvigorate the notions of justice into how we talk about families.
Now, what would you like to see happen if, you know, you could make the law? What would be some of the things that you would do?
Sure. Well, what I'd like to do is I'd like to look at the laws right now that grant special rights based on marriage and have us ask, why does this law exist? And when we can answer that question, I think we can decide what relationships should be subject to that law without privileging marriage. So to give one example, if you go to work and you die on the job, workers' compensation survivors benefits will be paid to certain people as a result of your death. And in most states, if you're living with somebody who is completely or partially dependent on you and you die at work, that person is only going to get benefits if the two of you are married to each other. But if we ask ourselves, why do these benefits exist? Why? What is the purpose of this law? The answer is, look, we're trying to compensate for the loss of an economic provider. And it turns out that marriage isn't a really good dividing line for that, because you can have somebody dependent on an economic provider without being married to them. And one of the things I'm excited about this book is that I found examples of laws that are doing just what we want them to do. So it turns out that in a handful of states, and California is one of them, you do not have to be married in order to get workers' compensation death benefits if your partner dies on the job. And so I'd like to take that law and use it as a model all over the country and say, look, we're trying to compensate for the loss of an economic provider. That doesn't have anything to do with marriage. Here is a state, and there are a handful of them, that's already doing this, that's letting someone else who's a member of the household prove that they were economically dependent on the wage earner in part or in full, and awarding benefits. That's very sensible.
We're speaking with Nancy D. Polakoff, who is the author of Beyond Straight and Gay Marriage, Valuing All Families Under the Law. And I wanted to talk about that too, Nancy, because we see in this day and age, particularly as people live longer, as the baby boom generation begins to age, many times the person who is economically dependent on you is not necessarily a spouse or a child. It could be a parent. It could be a sibling. I mean, there's a lot of scenarios there.
That's exactly right. And so if what you're trying to do is compensate for the loss of an economic provider, those are the people who you want to compensate, and it is going to be different in different instances. And it just turned out to be very interesting to me to learn that there are aspects of this workers' compensation survivors benefits program that take that into account with, you know, other relatives as well, where people simply prove that they relied on the person who died for some of their support, and then they are able to receive benefits. I would like to see that kind of system extended anytime the purpose of the law is to compensate for the loss of an economic provider. Now, so other laws have different purposes, but surely that is one that exists in many laws, and it just needs to be separated from marriage, because there's all sorts of relationships in which people depend on each other economically.
Well, I think about this too, because sometimes we get so wrapped around definitions. You know, I mean, I don't know how many times I've been putting someone down for discount or as a co-driver on a car and get, oh, is this a significant other? I mean, well, they're other than me, and obviously they're significant in my life, or we wouldn't be sharing a car. But, you know, how do you define these relationships? It's just craziness.
Right.
You know,
and I think that's something a lot of people would agree with.
You know, I mean, just, you know, let people define themselves and go from there, I think, would be the better way to go. And especially legally, because legally there's so many, if you're not married, it's just so difficult. You tell story after story of people who are evicted. I mean, you talked about the case in Blackjack, Missouri, where these two people had lived together for years. They had children together, and they were actually going to be prevented from living in this community because they weren't, quote-unquote, married.
Well, right. I think there is a history of housing laws being used inappropriately to determine what a proper family is. And one of the examples, I mean, obviously there are examples of gay and lesbian couples in that situation. A very famous case in New York where the surviving partner of a man who died of AIDS was almost evicted from his home, but there was a big success in that in court, where the court said, look, this guy is a member of his family. But I've got another example in there of a woman who wanted her father to move in to her subsidized housing unit, and when she filed the forms to get him to be able to be part of her unit, it was a one-bedroom apartment, and she was told he couldn't come and live with her. If she'd gotten married, her husband could have moved in with her, but instead she wanted to take care of her aging father. And although she was ultimately successful, she did receive a notice terminating her subsidized unit, and she had to go to 4 hearings over more than a year. So, you know, we can imagine that had she not been so tenacious, she would have lost her housing subsidy, because their idea of an overcrowded unit was an adult daughter and her father, but it's not an overcrowded unit if the woman wants to get married. You know, if there's an interest in how many people can share an apartment, it's how many people share an apartment. It's not what relationship they are to each other. That is exactly what you're saying about letting people define their own families.
And I guess the question I would have for you now, bringing it back to the original topic, is why should we in the gay community be interested in this? Because you're right. You know, right now people are fighting hard. You hear it on the campaign trail. You know, I am for gay civil unions, I am for this, I am for that. So why should we be interested in taking it that next step beyond?
Because marriage, and to a lesser extent, civil unions, domestic partnership, are really civil rights issues. They're saying we want equality with heterosexual couples who are able to marry. And, of course, I support equality. But as a family policy matter, even if we're just interested in LGBT people, there are so many relationships that matter to LGBT people. And when couples don't get married, which many of them won't, or don't register domestic partnerships, they should still be able to get economic benefits if one of them dies, to be able to live together. I mean, the example you gave of the heterosexual couple, obviously they could have married, but housing concerns and requiring people to get married are two entirely different things. Plus, you know, single, unpartnered LGBT people need laws that will serve their purposes also, that will make sure that they have the person they want to make medical decisions if they're incapacitated, to make sure that their relationships are valued, whether it's from an economic point of view or an emotional peace of mind point of view. So rather than just take the special rights that marriage now has for heterosexual people and say we're going to let the straight, gay couples who marry into the in crowd with the special rights, I'd just like to say we need to revise family law to value all families. And you know, marriage for same-sex couples just isn't going to do it. There's a lot of people who won't marry. Marriages will turn into divorces, as they do for heterosexuals. So, you know, I believe that the proposals I have in the book are going to meet a far greater number of needs from a family policy point of view. At the same time, I believe in equality, but I just don't believe that equal access to marriage is the answer to what's wrong with the law that affects gay and lesbian relationships.
Now, in your book, you talk about some other countries that have passed some of the laws you're speaking about, and in, I would say, every case, it's pretty much been positive. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. You know, I think people don't realize here that the United States is almost uniquely kind of marriage-crazed, that in many, many Western countries, whether a couple marries or not has very little relationship to the legal consequences of their life together. And Canada is the most dramatic example of this because, of course, Canada does allow same-sex couples to marry. So I think LGBT people here look to Canada as, you know, isn't that great? Gay couples can marry there. And what I want to say is Canada's great, but that's just a tiny bit of the reason for that. In Canada many years ago, the Supreme Court of Canada ruled that it was offensive to the dignity of their people to require different sex couples to get married in order to access certain rights, that essentially that was imposing a religious belief on people if you insisted that they get married, and therefore it became unlawful to discriminate against unmarried different sex couples. So then shortly after that, when same-sex couples were asking for legal protections, they just became included into the legal framework that was already there for different-sex unmarried couples. And after that, Canada allows same-sex couples to marry. So what I say and what makes it so different politically in Canada than here is that in Canada, sure, same-sex couples can marry, but they don't have to achieve any legal consequence because they can get all those legal consequences by living together. They do not need to marry. So marriage is really a choice in Canada. It's something that a couple can do to express something spiritually, emotionally, culturally, socially. And I understand and respect that for people for whom marriage expresses something that they wish to say about themselves and their relationship. That doesn't have anything to do with the law. And in Canada, it doesn't have anything to do with the law because your legal status does not change when you marry. You don't get any more rights than what you already had from living together.
And one of the things that we've talked about on our show as well is the fact that as a straight person, if you meet somebody who is from another country, you can marry them and they can become a citizen, but you have no options in a situation of same-sex partnering.
Well, right, and of course, that's unjust and needs to be changed. But one of the things I point out in my book, which I think is quite shocking to a lot of people, I think certainly for people connected to the gay rights movement, there is an understanding that there are many countries in the world where you can sponsor your same-sex partner for immigration. And, of course, the United States isn't one of those. But I think what's less well known is that almost all of those countries allow their citizens to sponsor a different sex unmarried partner. So even where marriage is available to different sex couples, or where marriage or registering a partnership is available to same-sex couples, couples don't have to do that to sponsor a partner for immigration. I just can't convey enough how little marriage matters to the law in many other Western countries. So you want to bring your unmarried partner into Australia, into the Netherlands, you know, you can do that without marrying, without registering if you're a same-sex couple. And, you know, that's just very foreign to the way our legal system works in the United States, which really privileges marriage.
And I guess what I'd like to say, too, and I'm going to ask you this question is, and how has that harmed those countries? I mean, has it, you know, has it just been an awful thing for them?
They certainly don't think so. They're perfectly happy with their regime. I mean, if you spend some time in some of these other countries, they really do kind of scratch their heads about what the big deal is here with marriage. I mean, you may know that, you know, unfortunately she didn't get elected, but Ségolène Royal, who ran against Sarkozy to be the head of France, she'd been living for many years with an unmarried partner and they had children together. That was not a reason not to vote for her. That was not a reason for her not to run for the highest office in the country. All you have to do is just imagine one of our presidential candidates with a similar family situation and how that would play out in the United States to understand just how different it is here and just how focused people are on marriage.
I was going to say, because you didn't even hear about that situation. I didn't even know about that situation until you just talked about it. And, you know, here it would have been front page news from jump. I mean, from
it would have made that person a non-starter as a candidate. And we have a well-organized, secular and religious, self-described marriage movement that has many people in the country convinced that the decline of lifelong heterosexual marriage is responsible for all our social problems. And they're wrong. Those are bogus claims. They're claims that try to let the government off the hook for its role in creating grave economic and social injustices by acting as though it's the private moral failing of people who don't just get married and stay married. And in other countries, I mean, to take France as an example, they do have a social safety net that's much better developed than ours is here. They do not try to claim that marriage is what it is that is going to privatize everybody's responsibility so that the government has none. I mean, even with changes over time that have sort of reduced the social democratic vision in Europe, it's still considerably better developed than it is here. So we really can't underestimate what it is to have marriage pushed forward by a right-wing movement as the solution to social problems. But it's a pervasive enough ideology that it's why, for example, we couldn't possibly imagine a candidate for president who with living with a partner unmarried.
What has the response been to the book so far? Have people been pretty accepting of it?
Well, I've gotten a lot of excitement where I go and talk about it. You know, sometimes people are amazed by some of the things they learn, but mostly I think for people who have only been focused on marriage, and certainly for gay and lesbian people who have been under the impression that the focus of the struggle for justice for LGBT families should be marriage, I've gotten really a great reception, because I think that people do realize when they listen to me talk about it that there is much more to protecting our families and relationships than marriage. And one of the things I'm really excited about this book is that, like the workers' compensation death benefits in California, I was able to find individual laws around the country in a lot of areas that accomplish just what they should without carving out special rights for marriage. And so I was able to pull those together essentially in a legislative agenda. So this doesn't seem anymore like this is some utopian vision. No, somebody's already had some of these ideas, and I've just brought them together and said, look, in Washington State, if you live together as a couple, when you separate, they're going to do justice in dividing your property. It doesn't matter whether you were married or not. It's the only state in the country that does it, but there's one. Let's go ahead and implement that in other places. And again, I've gone down the line of various laws trying to craft a legislative agenda that we should be advocating for whether we get married or not, whether we're in a state that's positive towards gay civil rights, or whether we're in one of the majority of states that has a constitutional amendment banning same-sex marriage. Those amendments aren't going away anytime soon. This is a way to protect gay and lesbian relationships in those states, because it isn't about marriage.
Now,
it's about making marriage matter less.
Now, if people want to get your book, where can they do that?
Well, there's a website for the book, beyondstraightandgaymarriage.com. You can read the introduction to the book and read some of the press I've gotten, see where I'm going to be appearing. And there are also links to click through and buy the book online. But, you know, I also recommend people go to their local independent bookstores. Most of them, I think, are carrying the book these days. And the major chains are also. So I appreciate everybody's interest.
Well, great. I want to thank you for taking the time to talk with us this evening. We've been talking to author Nancy D. Polakoff, author of Beyond Straight and Gay Marriage, Valuing All Families Under the Law. Nancy, have a good evening. And again, thank you so much for being with us tonight.
It's really been a pleasure. Thank you.
And thank you, Joan.
You're welcome.
That was Joan Devlin, our special correspondent from Iowa. Joan used to be living here in Houston and was a regular part of the show here in the mics at the studio, and then she moved away to Iowa to take a job, and so she still manages to stay involved in the show by doing her stuff remotely from Iowa, and we are definitely glad to have her for that.
Well, and
that's
guess
our correspondent in
yes,
Iowa. Don't forget.
What did I say?
It doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter.
That must have been where I heard it.
We would like to do something in the next half hour until 9 o'clock is open up the phone lines.
Did we do news wrap?
We're going?
No, we haven't done news wrap yet.
Okay.
But I want
we can do that at the top of the hour.
Well, I want to set this up because we want to ask people to call us at 713-526-5738. And, you know, we can just open up the phone lines and talk about things in the community, because we'd like to get our audience a little bit more involved. But before that, we could probably take a little break.
Oh, yeah. I've got a piece of music queued up here that I know everyone's going to like. Losing Town. That was Larry Block and the title track from his 2007 CD. News Wrap is next. This is Queer Voices.
Bridget Strong.
And I'm Lee Moore.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending March 15, 2008. José Luis Rodríguez Zapatero's Socialist Party was re-elected in Spain on March 9th, but not without a bitter campaign that included threats by the conservative opposition Partido Popular to overturn the country's marriage equality law, and accusations that the Vatican was meddling in Spanish affairs. Zapatero has repeatedly cited passage of the marriage equality law in 2005 as one of his major accomplishments. Partido Popular leader Mariano Rajoy regularly charged during the campaign that actions by Zapatero's administration were diminishing the country's morals. Spain's Roman Catholic Bishops' Conference issued a statement last month urging voters to defeat the socialists. But a survey released around the same time by Instituto Opinia showed that nearly 75% of those questioned said that they were comfortable with the marriage equality law, and only 18% favored repealing it. The socialists won 169 seats compared with the Partido Popular's 153. The biggest issues Zapatero faces in his second term are a stagnant economy, immigration, and the resurgence of militant Basque separatists.
Romano Prodi, who as Italy's prime minister tried to fulfill a campaign promise of legal recognition for same-gender couples, has announced that he's quitting politics. He lost a confidence vote in parliament in January after a 9-party coalition government he was leading fell apart. Prodi's support for lesbian gay rights caused tension in the coalition, which ranged from communists to parties affiliated with the Roman Catholic Church. He told Sky TG23 television this week that, "I'm finished with Italian politics, and possibly also with politics in general. The world is full of opportunities, and there is always something new to build." Prodi heads a caretaker government until the country holds a general election next month. Polls indicate that conservative politician, media magnate, and Vatican friend Silvio Berlusconi, the man Prodi ousted in the last election, will again become prime minister, which does not bode well for any legislative advances for the country's LGBT people.
Also quitting politics this week, but for other reasons, was Democrat New York Governor Eliot Spitzer. His payments to high-end call girls who travel across state lines to meet with him led to charges of federal finance law violations. Spitzer has been a staunch LGBT ally during his political career, and as governor called marriage legislation for same-gender couples a high priority. That measure passed in the state house last year, but the Republican-controlled Senate has not allowed debate on the bill. In light of the resignation, Lieutenant Governor David Patterson becomes the state's first African-American governor and the first legally blind governor in U.S. history. He served previously as the state Senate minority leader before joining Spitzer on the Democratic ticket. Patterson vigorously advocated for the marriage equality measure, and LGBT rights activists say he's been a progressive ally for more than 20 years. Patterson told the LGBT New York Blade newspaper earlier last year that one of the reasons we need same-sex marriage is because the statistics for heterosexual marriage are so bad. That might be a way to upgrade some of the success rates.
The Norwegian government has introduced legislation opening legal marriage to lesbian gay couples and granting them joint child custody rights. The Scandinavian country has, since 1993, allowed same-gender civil partnerships, but LGBT rights groups have long argued that it's a second-class status for those couples. The new legislation amends the definition of civil marriage to make it gender neutral. It also says that when a lesbian who is married to another woman becomes pregnant through in vitro, the partner will have all the rights of parenthood from the moment of conception, and that in adoptions by gay or lesbian couples, both partners would have joint parenting rights. While formally introducing the bill, Family Issues Minister Anniken Huitfeldt told Parliament that, contrary to some opponents' claims, the new law won't weaken marriage as an institution. Rather, it will strengthen it. Marriage won't be worth less because more can take part in it. Even though the coalition government has a majority in Parliament, some of its members have said they'll vote against the measure. Parliament's second largest bloc, the Party of Progress and the smaller Christian Democratic Party both immediately said they'd oppose the bill. Analysts believe some of its more controversial provisions may have to be abandoned if the legislation has any chance of passage.
Meanwhile, the constitutional arm of Venezuela's Supreme Tribunal of Justice has ruled that same-gender marriages cannot be constitutionally authorized, even though the South American nation's constitution bans discrimination based on sexual orientation. The March 4th decision cited a 1999 constitutional edict to protect monogamous matrimony between a man and a woman as the essential nucleus that gives origin to the family in the Venezuelan historic and cultural context. But, the tribunal added, the court wants to emphasize that the constitutional norm does not prohibit or condemn common law unions between persons of the same sex, which find constitutional cover in the fundamental right of free development of the personality. A dissenting decision by Judge Carmen Zuleta de Marchand supported full marriage equality, arguing that the other justices were influenced by ingrained social and religious prejudices. A statement issued by the queer group Affirmative Union of Venezuela called the ruling an advance with respect to the previous situation in which we have no legal existence. We commit ourselves to continue fighting with all legal means within our reach to obtain what should be common sense, the overcoming of discrimination in Venezuelan society.
In other news, gay Iranian teenager Mehdi Kazemi has won a reprieve from a British deportation order. The now 19-year-old originally came to London to study English 3 years ago, but sought asylum after he found out that a boyfriend back home had given authorities his name under interrogation before being convicted of sodomy and hanged. Fearing for his own life, if he was forced to return to Iran, Kazemi fled to the Netherlands after Britain denied his asylum request and ordered his deportation. But the Dutch High Court ruled this week that under European Union agreements, there was no choice but to return him to Britain. That's when more than 60 members of the House of Lords wrote to Home Secretary Jackie Smith, urging her to show compassion to Kazemi. She announced later in the week that, in the light of new circumstances since the original decision was made, I have decided that Mr. Kazemi's case should be reconsidered on his return to the UK from the Netherlands. The deportation order against him has been suspended pending that review. Activists are also urging a review of the case of 40-year-old Iranian lesbian Pega Amambaksh, who fled to Britain in 2005 after her girlfriend was sentenced to death by stoning. The Court of Appeal most recently denied a request for reconsideration of her deportation order, and her lawyers say they'll apply for a judicial review at the High Court. The British Home Office said in both cases that gays and lesbians are safe in Iran as long as they remain discreet. But Omar Kudus, a queer rights activist who campaigned for Kazemi, told the British Pink News website that to say that homosexuals in Iran are safe as long as they're discreet and live their lives in private is to say that Anne Frank was safe from Nazis in World War II as long as she hid in her attic.
The Egyptian government has indicted five more men for the habitual practice of debauchery under the guise of HIV prevention. According to a Human Rights Watch report this week, the five are among at least 12 men detained since October 2007 in what appears to be a widening police crackdown. The debauchery charge is used to prosecute private adult consensual sex between men. Four of the 12 men have already been sentenced to one-year prison terms. All detainees were forcibly tested for HIV, and charges against three were dropped when they tested negative. Of the five who went on trial this week, one faces an additional charge of facilitating the practice of debauchery for the other men. The lead prosecutor reportedly told a lawyer for the defendants that the men should not be allowed to roam the streets freely because the government considers them a danger to public health. Amnesty International and Human Rights Watch have jointly called on the Egyptian government to overturn the indictments and nullify the convictions of the four already imprisoned.
But finally, Jason Simmons, known to millions around the world as hunky lifeguard Logan Fowler on the primetime TV beach soap opera Baywatch, has come out in an Australian magazine. The 37-year-old actor said he plans to marry his partner, Irish actor John O'Callaghan, in Canada, though it won't be legally recognized in Australia, nor in the couple's current home, California. They've been together for 8 months and have also adopted a 6-year-old Ugandan boy. Simmons told Australia's New Idea magazine that, Our son needs to see we can stand in front of family and loved ones who are going to support our union through the good times and bad. Simmons was born in the Australian state of Tasmania, and Tasmanian gay and lesbian rights group spokesperson Rodney Croom told reporters that the success of Jason Simmons, both in his professional and personal life, sends a message to young gay Tasmanians that they can achieve their goals and need not be limited by other people's prejudice. An estimated 1 billion people in 142 countries tuned in to watch Simmons play Australian lifeguard Logan Fowler on Baywatch, which still runs in syndication around the world.
That's News Wrap for the week ending March 15th, 2008. Written by Greg Gordon and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles.
Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community. For This Way Out, I'm Lee Moore.
And I'm Bridget Strong.
Can't Break My Heart, that is Horse, and that's from her 2000 CD, Red Haired Girl.
Well, we
so there you go.
Yes, there
and
you
next
go.
Next week on Queer Voices,
mm-hmm.
yes.
on Queer Music Heritage, Horse McDonald will be interviewed by J.D. Doyle.
Oh.
The entire second hour.
Yes.
The entire second hour. And if you were going to call in, you haven't. It's 713-526-5738.
We're not
a call-in show. And people just,
popular.
We don't have them trained
you
to
know,
do that.
You know, we
right.
kind of threw it out that tonight we had this gap in the rundown and that, well, let's just take call-ins, something we seldom do. And so then we just didn't really handle it very
maybe
well.
Maybe because we don't have an 800 number.
Oh.
Oh, well.
Or is that a, what a...
713-526-5738, and we don't want any money. We just want
yes.
you to call and talk to us.
But that does...
Remind people that
yes.
we had a successful pledge drive and we actually went over our goal, but that's the pledge goal. That's the pledge amount.
We need folks to honor their pledge
right.
and to send the money mm-hmm. and keep KPFT and Queer Voices on the air. While we're waiting, maybe we'll get one call at 713-526-5738 if you have any kind of comment you want to make about the show.
Or any comment.
The phone came on. Huh? It is ringing now. One of our lovely Bryans.
While
is
we're waiting here
it.
For 308 days until the next inauguration.
Oh, that's
all
right.
Yes. Until Hillary Clinton takes office, Madam President.
Well, we got Ray on the phone.
And you mean the Ray? Ray Hill?
Am I here?
You are
hey,
on, and we
well,
have Ray Hill
say,
on the air.
Let me tell you, I've got plenty callers to share.
Go ahead.
You know, on Friday nights, there are about 500 people trying to call my show.
Well, okay, Mr. Bragging. But do you have a comment you'd like to make on Queer Voices tonight?
I absolutely do. We really haven't had open call-ins on this show. Since way back when I was a host and I used to come on and bait rednecks to call in because I love to argue with them. You can't lose an argument if you've got the buttons and the knobs.
That's true.
And so without being a radio talk show bully like the AM folks today, I would invite people to call in and then I'd be very polite and after they got through ranting and raving about them damn queers and yada yada yada, then I'd shut them up and then I would straighten it out.
So to speak.
But I know your audience is not used to calling in, but there is now so much going on in what we refer to as the community. I went to church Sunday. Now, don't faint.
Really?
I went to church at Bering Sunday, and I hadn't been there in a good many years.
I was wondering why I heard a thunderclap of lightning.
Oh, it was a beautiful day. We started service outside, and I was concerned about lightning for a while. But the flowers smelled wonderful, and we went in on the Sunday before the Easter. And the place was just full of the most friendly, loving, gay, non-gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgendered, wonderful people in there acting very strangely similar to all other kinds of Methodists.
Amazing, and, isn't it?
And my sister, I have a 75-year-old sister who enjoys going to church, and I've been going with her. We've been going to Bethel Church, which is up near the intersection of Shepherd and Washington Avenue, where Reverend Ralph Langley, Lasher holds forth as acting pastor. And that church, too, is opening and welcoming church. And they act a lot like other United Church of Christ members. UCC actually does not stand for Unitarians Considering Christ. It's,
watch out. What you say about the Unitarians?
Oh, no, the Unitarians are wonderful. You know,
you can be anything and be a Unitarian.
Unitarians have not seen GLBT people in a different light for about 100 years now. So there are Unitarian congregations all over the city that actually are so welcoming, you feel like you're imposing when you go there. But do you understand what a change that has been for, with the exception of Unitarians, all the other denominations? That is just an enormous change.
That's a good point, Ray.
And we live in a world where many of the hurdles that we have been concerned about for the last 40 years, for me, have really been accomplished. We're not through with marriage equality, and we're not through with several other finer points of life. But in terms of our being legal and our being welcome, and you know what I really think did it? I think that the sin that dare not speak its name just doesn't shut the hell up.
Well, we know that, don't we?
Don't we? Yes, we do.
And I am so proud of Jennifer, our first transgendered president of Houston Gay, Lesbian, and Transgendered Political Caucus, that I could, I just don't, you just have no idea what a personal accomplishment that is for me. And Deborah, remember, not too long ago, we were going through a struggle where the L word was included in organizational names.
Amen.
As an act of, and you know, there are not many people that even remember that struggle anymore.
I know. Well, now we're here at the top of the hour, and we've got to go on to our next segment.
Well, I will go away, and I hope you get more callers.
Thank you,
Excellent.
Ray.
Thank you for calling, Ray.
Bye-bye.
And you're listening to Queer Voices.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT Houston. Now, more of Queer Voices with Jack Walensky and the entire Queer Voices crew.
Wow, what an act of following the infamous Ray Hill. This is Brian Levinka, and I have Billy Underwood in the studio tonight. And next weekend is Easter weekend. Is this not the earliest Easter we've had in a long time?
It's been a couple of years. It came early a couple of years ago.
You know, I was doing research online trying to figure out why Easter comes at an earlier time each year, and it's based on a religious calendar and kind of the stars calendar, and the earliest it can be is March 21st. So we're like one day later than it, you know, the earliest possible date for Easter.
Well, you've got me on that because I don't follow the calendar like that, but I just knew it came earlier this year, so we had to work a lot harder.
Well, the reason we're talking about Easter is there are many events going on in the community Easter weekend, but the one that I'm involved with and Billy's involved with is Jungle 16 this year. This is our 16th year.
Right.
So for people that haven't heard about Jungle, Billy, what is Jungle?
Well, Jungle, primarily what it is, it's a large dance party, just to be quite honest with you. It is a benefit that's put on by the Bayou City Boys Club, which is a nonprofit organization here in town that has been doing this benefit for the past 16 years, and it's to benefit AIDS and HIV-related charities. It's a dance party that's put on in the form of what they used to call a circuit party, which is basically that.
Ooh, circuit has a bad connotation. I think we like to call it a community dance event. These days,
yeah, you could call it that, but our party has evolved to the point, and it's a really fantastic event where a lot of people get to come together for a fantastic cause and get to have a great time.
Mm-hmm. Now, how many people usually come to?
It's varied over the years. Last year, I want to say we probably had about 700 or so people, but you remember last year the weather was just unreal.
Let me tell you, I mean, our event is inside, and of course, there's another event that's outside on Easter Sunday, and that, of course, is Bunnies on the Bayou. And they are very susceptible to the weather.
Yeah. Well, we're hoping for 1,000 this year. We really are hoping for 1,000 folks. That would be great. The venue that we have is really a fantastic venue. Last year was our first year in that venue, and it is just absolutely wonderful. The comments comments we got from the guests were just over the top.
Well, tell us more about the venue.
Well, it's the venue is it's Warehouse Live. It's on 813 St. Emmanuel. It's about two blocks behind the George R. Brown Convention Center. It's a fantastic venue. It's an old warehouse that was converted a few years ago, and it's a major concert venue for smaller groups.
Yeah, I see always in Houston Press and, you know, in the Rags, different concerts that go in there. And,
right.
It is designed for sound, and it's kind of built for jungle.
Oh, sure. The you know, our event, it's grown to the point now, it's really a professionally done event. The laser show is incredible. The lights are incredible. The sets that we're going to have this year are just wonderful. Our theme this year is Indiana Jones, and it's going to be really, really cool.
Well, we're trying to tie into the Indiana Jones movie that comes out in May.
Right.
So we're kind of an adventure theme, kind of, you know.
Yeah, it's gonna be really neat like that. We're gonna have some of the same things that we've had, you know, in years past. There's going to be, you know, the animals and the tropical nature of the event. You know, it's really a neat party to go to.
So should guests get dressed up for this? Should they?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we encourage that. You know, the crazier the better, and you know, the more skin the better. But that being said, it's a theme party, and so we want you to participate like that.
Now, we mentioned Bunnies on the Bayou. Is Bunnies and BCBC, is that the same thing?
Okay, let me straighten this out for a lot of people. Bunnies on the Bayou is another organization similar to BCBC, or the Bayou City Boys Club. Bunnies on the Bayou is also a nonprofit organization that has the same mission that we do, and that's to raise money for charities, HIV and AIDS-related charities, that affect the quality of life for individuals. But, yeah, we're two completely separate organizations.
Yes, I get that all the time. Like, oh, you put on Bunnies. I'm like, no.
No, we have done or partnered with them in the past, and it's a great partnership. You know, Bunnies is a fantastic organization. This year, we decided to, you know, do our own events respectively, and you know, I look forward. I hope we get a chance to partner with them in the future. But Bunnies is a separate event, and it's a wonderful event on Easter Sunday.
Now, we talked about raising money. Tell us about some of the organizations.
We've got several beneficiaries this year. We've got eight, and I'll just kind of go over.
Why so many this year?
Well, the way we do it, we're an organization where we form different committees when we put on this event. This event, just to give you a little bit of a background for the Jungle Party, takes about 6 months to pull this thing together. It's a lot of work. You know, we're a totally volunteer organization, and so what we do is we form committees, and we had a beneficiary committee. Basically we put it out to the community that, you know, our event's an annual event, and so these different organizations submitted, I guess for lack of a better word, proposals. And we, our committee, or the beneficiary committee, reviewed these, and they came up with eight candidates.
We actually received 25 applications.
Really? Okay.
And so we only have a limited amount of money to give away. So it was very difficult to figure out the chosen ones.
Well, we've got a great group here this year. We've got a lot of beneficiaries this year, which is it's a little unique. But let me tell you, this event has grown in size to where the dollar figure that we're actually generating from this event, we can actually afford to give more to more groups. Our beneficiaries this year are AIDS Foundation Houston, the Stone Soup Food Assistance.
Great program.
Association for Advancement of Mexican American Citizens. It's also known as AMA. Bering Omega Community Services, which I have personally been a witness to some of the things that they do in the community.
They have multiple programs.
Fantastic program. Montrose Counseling Center, Houston Buyers Club, which I encourage any of you folks that are doing workout regimes and things like that, go by there and see them. They've got the entire line of supplements, and they're open to everybody.
Yeah, and it's a nonprofit, so you can, you know.
Absolutely.
Donate a little bit more.
Another organization I'm real happy about this year is Pet Patrol, and they provide services to folks that are shut-ins or HIV and AIDS patients, or
so that adds
and what they do, that again, that affects quality of life. That helps them care for their pets. It'll take their pets. They'll visit them, take their pets for walks, take them to the vet. You know, that's something
that's pets, important.
It's very important, because when you're affected by, you know, this disease, sometimes your pets are the only thing that you have.
I know that pets are most people's families. You know,
absolutely. I mean, pets are very, very important to us. And they're very, very important to me personally. And I think that they're a great program, Pet Patrol. Another beneficiary this year is Southeast Texas Legal Services.
Mm-hmm. And they provide services exclusively for HIV/AIDS cases.
Right. Ryan was probably a little closer to the beneficiary committee this year than me, so he's got a little bit more information than I do.
I'm intimately involved.
And the other beneficiary we have this year is the Thomas Street Clinic Patient Services, and that's part of the Harris County Hospital District.
Yes, and that's just general patient care.
Right. But we've got a lot of great beneficiaries this year, and we hope to hope to meet our goal. We're hoping to raise $60,000 this year.
Yes, that would be a new record for us. The most we've ever raised was $57,000. So
yeah,
we're on our way, I think.
The great thing about this event, which a lot of people, I don't know if they know this or not, but we try to pay for our party by underwriting.
Mm-hmm.
And what it is, there's a lot of wonderful people in the community that are very, very generous. And what they do is we have a kickoff party every year, about 3 months before the event. And we invite all these folks that have helped us in the past, and we have this party where they put up the seed money to get the party started.
Right.
to borrow a phrase. What we do is, the party is completely underwritten, or it has been up to this point underwritten each year, and it's actually underwritten this year. We paid for the party last week.
It was stressful, let me tell you.
Yeah.
Many nights of not sleeping.
Well, I tell you, there were some bullets sweating this year. We've got a whole new board on the Bayou City Boys Club this year, and I loved it. Our past president, Mike Collins, the other day, when he sent out his congratulations, he said, "Congratulations, BCBC 4.0, and I thought that was really neat.
We've nonprofit organizations kind of evolve, and things change and go up and down, and I'm glad to say that BCBC is kind of evolving and moving with the times.
Yeah, we've been fortunate in that, like I said, there's a lot of very, very generous people out there that I can't begin to thank in this program, because we don't have enough time. But like I said, the party has been paid for completely this year, so 100% of our ticket proceeds or our door proceeds are going to go to our beneficiaries. We're one of the last parties in the country that we raise money for charity. Other parties like White Party and Winter Party, those have turned into commercial ventures, and they're really not what we are.
And I think that says a lot about the community that we live in and we give back to, that we do have the support from the community and people giving to the party and allowing us to give back to the community.
Yeah.
And absolutely, we couldn't do this without the support of our underwriter.
Oh, absolutely. You know, Houston is a big, small town.
That's so funny you say that, because I feel like it's a small town aspect.
I mean, a lot of people, a lot of people know each other here, and having lived in other parts of Texas, I will say this, I'm from a small town just south of here.
Well, I am too, from Brazoria County.
You're from Brazoria. I'm from Lake Jackson.
See, I grew up thinking I was the only homosexual within 40 miles. I used to go to Montrose and say, that's where they live.
Well, I had to go off to college before I could come, I won't say come to grips with that, but be comfortable with it.
Well, I went to A&M thinking, I'm the only one. And
oh, you poor thing.
Oh, my God, there were lots. Lots in what they call his closet station.
But, like I said, Houston is a big, small town, and everybody knows everybody here. And, without our beneficiaries and without that personal element of friendship that we try to cultivate as the organization, as the Bayou City Boys Club, try to do with their underwriters, this party just wouldn't be possible.
Now let's talk a little bit more about the party. There's a special section in the party, the VIP lounge.
Yes. The way the venue is set up, we have, it's a large venue, and we have two areas set up. We have a general admission area, which will get you, your ticket price will get you into the general admission part of the party, which will have, where the DJ is, the dance floor, and all the refreshment stands, as I like to call them. And then there's our VIP area. A specific ticket price, you can purchase a ticket for our VIP area. And by the way, our tickets are available online, and I encourage everyone listening, if you're interested in going to this party, like I said, it's a lot of fun. Our website is www.jungle.junglehouston.com. If you go to our website, it details the different levels of tickets that are available on there. But our VIP area is really neat this year in that it's got some more intimate seating areas in there. Our silent auction is going to be there in there this year. And if you go to that website I mentioned earlier, the amount of items that we have in our silent auction this year is just absolutely incredible.
We have to give a shout out to the
Fernando Franco.
Fernando Franco of Franco Chiropractic.
Dr. Fernando Franco, absolutely
right.
He has
busted his butt for the last 6 months.
You know, I can't believe about three or four years ago, I kind of floated the idea of doing this silent auction. And let me tell you, some people that have really grabbed it and taken it off, or taken off with it, I've got to give props out to Fernando. We've got casino trips this year. We've got trips to Fort Lauderdale. He's got airfares included in some of these trips. Okay. It's really, really neat. Some
luxurious,
of the stuff that he's pulled together.
Limousine driven
progressive dinner here in Houston is some of the top restaurants.
Yes, exactly.
But in our VIP lounge, like I said, we've got this silent auction, but you also, what I really appreciate at this is we've also got, we're going to have a small buffet area set up in there that's going to have some, you know, noshy type food that our guests can eat that maybe don't want to go out and, you know, dance and get all sweaty, but we also have our own private bathrooms, which
is
nice.
Well, you know, it's kind of a party within a party, you know. The VIP lounge is like an intimate cocktail party with your friends, and then the general area is more kind of the crazy dance and,
yeah,
you know, shirts off.
Yeah,
if,
right.
If you like that sort
it
of
really
thing.
Is. And the venue, like I said, it lends itself to go. You can go in between either area. If you're one of our guests that decides to purchase a VIP ticket, you know, you can go between either area. You can go out and get sweaty and dancing if you want, and then come back and get you some water and cool off and visit.
And peruse the wonderful silent auction.
And the silent auction is that's what's really going to put us over the top this year. I'm just convinced that that particular item brought in about
it was 7,000 last year.
7,000
our goal
is last year.
10,000 this year.
Well, I tell you, I don't.
So that's 20% of what our goal is to raise right there, and we have wonderful fragrance packages and just all kinds of.
Well, let's just put it this way. Get a VIP ticket and come look at it. Come
exactly.
see it.
So we talked about getting tickets online. Where else can people get tickets?
MailUware, which is on Westheimer. It's a fabulous store, a wonderful store.
Yes, they are actually a Jungle sponsor this year.
Absolutely. And they have backed us on several.
What's the name of that store
again?
It's MailUware.
MailUware?
Yes. MailUware.
It's literally two blocks from this station here. It's on 415 Westheimer. Tim Wilde is the owner, and
right.
Wonderful
and Tony McClellan.
Wonderful clothing and swimsuits and all kinds of different things.
Yeah, they've been a real major sponsor of ours and some other things. Pride Parade a few years ago, they've helped us out on that. They're a really great bunch of guys. And let me tell you, Tim Wilde, from the moment he opened that store, he's given back to the community. I can't thank him enough. He's a great guy. And
yeah, so,
go to the store, buy some tickets, and buy some underwear.
Okay, so let's talk about what's coming up for the events. I mean, there's the Jungle Party, but there's also other events that start on Thursday.
Yeah, there are. We've partnered with some of the local nightclubs here in town in kind of putting together a weekend concept. There are kickoff parties. I think our first kickoff party is...
The first party is the kickoff party at Meteor on Thursday night, starting at 10 o'clock and going till 1. And the very... good-looking DJ Seth Cooper from Austin will be spinning. He was on the cover of Twit, I think, a week ago.
Okay.
So he'll be spinning that night. And that's at Meteor, like I said.
Great.
And then
I think there is the what they call the Gather the Tribe party, I guess it's Friday night, or am I getting ahead of myself?
Well, we've tied into kind of the Indiana Jones theme. So
right.
Raiders of the Temple.
Okay, I'll go with that.
Raiders of the Temple is on Friday night, and that's at South Beach, the wonderful South Beach at 8:10 Pacific with DJ Hector Fonseca, which is a up-and-coming DJ from New York, and we are supposed to have a musical sensation that night. He's kind of
fantastic.
He's a big. He was. I think he was voted one of the best up-and-coming DJs by. I think it was Out Magazine.
Great.
Then of course Saturday night is the main event.
Right.
At Warehouse Live, and we didn't talk about our DJ. Our DJ is DJ Mark Anthony. From Montreal,
Canada. That's right. He is spun at the Black and Blue Ball in Montreal, which I actually was fortunate enough to attend, gosh, back in 2001, and it was at the Olympic Stadium. And I don't know if anybody remembers when the Olympics were in Montreal, but to have a venue that large and for that entire area of that football field to be filled up with, you know,
it's largest.
It's fantastic.
It's the largest nonprofit party there
right,
is in the world, and he spins that, and he's coming down and. He's going to bring his high energy vocal music. There were some people that were concerned that he wasn't going to have vocals, and I talked to him on the phone, and he's like, "I love vocals. You know, this is, you know."
Oh, you've got to have a diva singing an anthem at least.
You know, it's
once or twice.
You know, what is it about Southern boys that like the vocals? You know.
It's, oh, man. Let me tell you, Loletta Holloway, love her.
I don't even know who that is. Okay, and then moving on, after the Jungle Party, we have an After Hours Party, which is at Next with the fabulous DJ Allison Calagna. With a special,
she's great. I like her a lot.
She's very well-received and well-known in Houston. Right. All the boys like her. There's a performance by Fleva, which is a dance diva extraordinaire. And then on Sunday night, we return to South Beach with DJ David Knapp.
And that's for the closing party, isn't that right?
That's the closing party. And those are the Jungle Weekend events. Now, we have a weekend pass, which allows you to get into Bunny's on Easter Sunday. So you buy the pass, and you get into all the Thursday through Sunday events for one low price.
Right. Well, not to sound like a commercial here, but let me just kind of, if I haven't hit on this yet, you know, the Bayou City Boys Club started way back in 1993 with a bunch of guys that were turning a certain age, and they felt that they needed to make a difference in the community. You know, back in the late 80s and early 90s was the height of the HIV/AIDS epidemic, and, you know, they saw what was going on. People were losing a lot of friends, and they felt that they needed to do something, and that's really how this whole thing started. You know, the first event, they raised a little money, and it's just grown into something. They started out at a plant warehouse over on the east side of town.
Is that where the name Jungle comes from?
That's exactly where it comes from, because of since they had it in a plant warehouse, they figured, you know, let's just, you know, use what we've got here for decoration, and that's how this thing started. And it's just grown into this fantastic organization. I'm very fortunate to have been able to be a part of it for going on almost 5 years now. And it's a great bunch of guys. We're looking for members. If there's anyone interested, there's a link on our website that you can email us. It's a great organization.
It is a great organization. We're looking for people that want to make a difference in the community, and, you know, don't mind volunteering, and, you know, just want to have fun. You know?
Right. There's a work commitment. I mean, it's a serious deal when we get into this. Like I mentioned earlier, it takes 6 months to throw this party. To put this party together.
I'm about to get divorced. If I mention Jungle or BCBC after this weekend, I'm seriously going to be single.
Yeah.
Sorry, Davey.
Yeah, my partner's the same way. He's like, all I know is Saturday. He's like, where's my ticket?
Yeah, it's been crazy. Okay, so let's recap. Okay, this weekend is Easter weekend. The Jungle 16th anniversary Jungle Party will be held at Warehouse Live. Tickets are available online at junglehouston.com. And in Houston at Meluware, 415 West Timer. There's also weekend passes available. Produced by the Bayou City Boys Club, of which Billy Underwood and I are both first and second vice president. So,
yeah, I don't know how that happened, but I'm really enjoying it.
You know, it's very easy to be the vice president, not the president.
It's, that's another thing. I want to mention Parker Langley tonight. He is our president. He is a fantastic team builder. I think he's really gone out of his way to make this group homogenous. And like I said, it's a whole new board this past year. And for us to be able to do what we have done without leadership like Parker, and the other members of our board have been able to provide to pull all these guys together, it's incredible.
You know, getting a bunch of gay men to do something is like herding cats.
It is.
One thing I wanted to mention before we go, Jungle is 18 and up. We started that last year.
Yeah, it is 18 and up, and we encourage you guys to come to the party that have not been to the party in the past. It's a fantastic venue, and I don't think you'll be disappointed.
We're trying to get the younger generation to come, because the people that attend Jungle are getting older. I mean, even I'm getting older, and you know, we want the next generation to come.
Yeah, I can see the gray hair from here.
No, that's the light. It's not my gray hair.
But yeah, we are exactly what we're trying to do is open this party up and to get folks to come to this and to, you know, realize that there's still a need out there. Just, you know, today, just like 16 years ago,
well,
there's a need.
There's not a cure, and HIV is a virus, and I truly believe that it will mutate, and, you know,
well,
heaven forbid there's a drug-resistant strain that develops and mutates, and we go through this all again, you know?
Yeah, it's, let's just say, you know, she's not nice, and what we've got to do is we've got to try to make a difference, and this is what we do to make a difference.
Absolutely.
It's a lot of fun. You know, guys, please come out to this party. It's going to be a blast.
Information, junglehouston.com.
Right.
Starting Thursday and going till Sunday. If you can last that long. I don't think I can.
I'm too old.
I know, exactly. So this weekend, check it out. And I think
and go to our website, and if you've got any questions, just click on that link, and we will get back to you with a response.
It'll come to my mailbox, and I'll check it, and I'll respond as quickly as I can. So, Billy, is there anything we left out?
No, I think we've covered it all, Brian. I really appreciate you having me here tonight and being able to talk about what I think is a great event. It's one of the last few big charity events like this in the country.
In Houston, it is one of the larger HIV/AIDS events.
And it's
we put some money out there.
You know, and I just can't stress to you enough how something like this is really close close to me, close to my heart. But it's also a blast. So just come out to the party. We really like to see you.
Absolutely. Thank you, Billy.
All right.
You're listening to Queer Voices.
Everybody's a hopeful in this city of talent and time. High on determination to live it out. Everybody's distracted when they dance with one eye on the door. So afraid to be missing the next best thing. There's something more. All these days are not how we dreamed they would be. And those we love are not who we thought we would see. And no one here can remember the name of his hometown or where it came from. There's not much here, so we can give it and run. So announce your departure and settle the debts that you owe. 'Cause they know that we're leaving and won't be back. We'll find a home. Days are not how we dreamed they would be. Those we love are not who we thought we would see. No one here can remember the name of his hometown or where it came from. There's not much here, so we can give it up and run. And it was, but it wasn't. And it does, but it doesn't make this place the home I need. Whoa, all these days are not how we dreamed they would be. And those we love are not who we thought we would see. And no one here can remember not much here, so we can give it up. There's not much here, so we can give it up. There's not much here, so we can give it up and run.
Not much here. No, actually, that's the name of the track, Not Much Here. That was Phil Putnam from his album Best of Intentions from 2007. This is Queer Voices.
An author brings his favorite character out of the memoir and into the studio with him later in the program.
When we get behind closed doors, when she lets her hair hang down, and she makes me glad that I'm a man. Oh, no one knows what goes on behind closed doors.
It seems that Oklahoma State Representative Sally Kern thought a small meeting with some of her Republican constituents was a safe place for virulent anti-gay remarks. But unfortunately for her, citizen journalism struck again. Someone secretly recorded Kern's talk, and the Gay and Lesbian Victory Fund posted it on YouTube. In no time, well over 825,000 people had heard it. Victory Fund President Chuck Wolf wrote an open letter to the lawmaker explaining that it was his organization's intention to draw attention to the fact that even elected leaders like you are saying some nasty and potentially dangerous things about your fellow citizens. With that same rationale in mind, here are Kern's unedited comments.
The homosexual agenda is destroying this nation. Okay, it's just a fact. Not everybody's lifestyle is equal. Just like not all religions are equal. You know, the very fact that I'm talking to you like this here today puts me in jeopardy. Okay? And I'm not anti, I'm not gay bashing, but according to God's word, that is not the right kind of lifestyle. It has deadly consequences for those people involved in it. They have more suicides, and they're more discouraged, there's more illness, their lifespans are shorter. You know, it's not a lifestyle that is good for this nation. Matter of fact, studies show that no society that has totally embraced homosexuality has lasted more than, you know, a few decades. So it's the death knell for this country. I honestly think it's the biggest threat even that our nation has, even more so than terrorism or Islam, which I think is a big threat, okay? Because what's happening now, they're going after in schools. Two-year-olds, you know why they're trying to get early childhood education? They want to get our young children into the government schools so they can indoctrinate them. I taught school for close to 20 years, and we're not teaching facts and knowledge anymore, folks. We're teaching indoctrination, okay? And they're going after our young children as young as 2 years of age to try to teach them that the homosexual lifestyle is an acceptable lifestyle. You know, gays are infiltrating city councils. Did you know Eureka Springs? Anybody been there at the Passion Play? Okay, have you heard that the city council of Eureka Springs is now controlled by gays? Okay, there are some others. Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, Tacoma, Maryland, Kensington, Maryland, in Vermont, Oregon, West Palm Beach, Florida, and a lot of other places in Florida. What's happening? And they are winning elections. One of the things I deal with in our legislature, I tried to introduce a bill last year that would notify parents. Schools had to let parents know what clubs their students were involved in. And the reason I did that bill primarily was this. We have the Gay Straight Alliance coming into our schools. Kids are getting involved in these groups. Their lives are being ruined. Their parents don't know about it. So I introduced a bill that says you have to notify all clubs and things. And one of my colleagues said, you know, we don't have a gay problem in my community, so that's why I voted against that bill. Well, you know what? To me, that is so dumb. If you've got cancer or something in your little toe, do you say, well, you know, I'm just going to forget about it because the rest of you's fine? It spreads, okay? And this stuff is deadly, and it's spreading, and it will destroy our young people. It will destroy this nation.
Those remarks by Oklahoma State Representative Sally Kern have understandably caused a major uproar. She's received thousands of critical email and voicemail messages, and one queer celebrity used a non-traditional means this week to register her disapproval. Ellen DeGeneres played some excerpts from Kern's comments on her multi-award-winning daytime TV talk show, and then tried to reach out to the state legislator.
Oh,
Okay, I feel like there's some misinformation going on here, and I think I need to call her. I think... She's clearly just mistaken. She's talked to someone and they've confused her. I doubt she'll answer. Trying to figure out which societies have disappeared that we don't know about.
You've reached the office of Representative Sally Kern. You're unable to answer the phone at the moment. If you will leave your name, number, and a message, we'll get back to you as soon as possible. Thank you for calling. Have a great day.
Sorry, cannot leave a message now because this user's mailbox is full.
I bet. I'll leave it. She's busy. It seems that she's getting some voicemails. I'll leave a message right here just in case she's watching. Hi, I'm Ellen. The gay one. And I would like to, leave a message for Sally Kern. I just want to talk to you because I heard some things that you said, and I just would like to talk to you. I feel like I could clear some things up. And give me a call. So I'm here usually. And then also a little later on I'll be at the Dinosaur Golf Tournament, of course. Doesn't conflict with my women's basketball games that I go to. Sally.
That was comedian and TV talk show host Ellen DeGeneres responding to the now infamous homophobic rant of Oklahoma State Representative Sally Kern. Kern has staunchly refused to apologize for her remarks, claiming free speech rights. Despite a flood of complaints, the Republican leadership in Oklahoma State House is just as set against forming a committee to determine whether or not to censure Kern. Meanwhile, the LGBT group Oklahomans for Equality is just as determined to stay in the fight, which has often involved locking horns with Kern. They're urging the legislature to take this opportunity to pass a state hate crimes law.
I'm Ellen DeGeneres, and you're listening to This Way Out, the Gay and Lesbian International News Magazine. That was without cue cards, people.
Robert Lelo was an East Texas sissy boy when his father left, and his mother began a desperate regimen of makeovers, plastic surgeries, and hairpieces, all calculated to secure a wealthy new husband. This Way Out's Steve Pride poured a big glass of iced tea and sat on the porch swing with Lelo and his mama to talk about his hilarious new memoirs of a beautiful boy.
In the Dear John letter Daddy left for Mother and me on a Saturday afternoon in early June 1996, on the Florentine inlaid table in the front entry of our house, which we found that night upon returning from a day spent in the creme-colored light of Neiman's, Daddy wrote that he was leaving us because Mother was crazy and because she'd driven me crazy in a way that perfectly suited her own insanity. This is my story, the memoirs of a beautiful boy.
The events in your memoir were hilarious to read, but how were they to live?
Well, not always a laugh. I grew up in a very small rural town in East Texas. I think East Texas, in a loopy kind of a way, is maybe the best place in America for a writer to be from. Not to live, but to be from, because I think that it's one of the last places to resist any sort of homogenization of language. You know, it's still... sounds like East Texas, and there's a lot of humor and flair. It's not so great if you happen to be a big sissy, which I had the blessing or curse of being, depending on how you look at it. It was very hard at times, and it was sort of living under the threat of constant violence, which isn't necessarily bad for art in the long run. So if you can make it to the long run. Somebody said, in the long run, we're all dead.
Now, oddly, the least painful moment in the book was your coming out.
I know, it was a tough paragraph, yes. You know, there's that sort of wonderful soap opera moment where you're supposed to say, you know, I am a homosexual and gasp, you know, and get the smelling salts. I never had a smelling salts moment. I kept telling people, I have something to share with you. Please sit down and take their hand and say, I'm a homosexual. And everyone I've ever said this to has sort of assumed that we were already working from that script, you know? And my grandmother paused, and it was this very sort of tense pause, and I thought, oh, God, how is she going to take this? I adore her. And she said, I'm sorry, I just thought we already knew that, you know? And unfortunately, that's always been the case. My mother said the same thing. My mother said, well, of course you're gay. Women like me always have gay children. Look at Lana Turner. Look at Cher. Look at Queen Elizabeth.
Robert, of all the writers I've ever interviewed, you're the first one who brought a character from the book down to the radio station. In this case, it's your fabulous mother, Jessica Wilson. How fair was your son's portrayal of you in the book?
Oh, it was right on. All the really wild, crazy stories, unfortunately, are true. You know, the things about the wigs and the hair and the shaving of the head and the implant, you know, everything.
Shooting out, ricocheting.
Everything was true, unfortunately. The scary thing is that at the time I was doing all these crazy things, they seemed normal. And I'm going, what was I thinking when I shaved my head?
You were having a hard time.
You're being generous.
You were doing the best you could with what you had.
But I absolutely thought I was doing the right thing, doing all that.
Robert, what do you want the reader to take away from your story?
If I do say anything new, it would be that I think that I'm one of the first gay people of my generation, you know, to sort of tell a story that isn't tortured, you know? I think that that's the new sort of thing, that people are having happy, not completely unconventional sort of middle-class lives all over the country. I think it's so interesting to look at, like, the Cheneys, who have managed to absorb their gay daughter and her partner and their child into this very sort of traditional Republican structure. And I think that there are those stories all over America, very sort of conventional people who just happen to be gay or lesbian.
Once again, Robert Lolo and the Memoirs of a Beautiful Boy.
And the reason Mother and I could talk to each other this way, so that the meanest thing we could say was still funny and affectionate, was because we shared that special bond mothers share with their gay sons, even when they're only 16 years old and don't know they're gay yet. Mother and I were best friends. A lucky thing, since besides each other, we were both utterly friendless. She had contempt for men and didn't trust women, and I was a world-ranking sissy, and we were both isolated out on Nana and Papa's ranch. So among the only things I knew for sure when I was 16 years old was that I adored my beautiful mother, and she understood me perfectly. Mother thought her job as my parent was to make sure my life ended up as different from hers as possible. And she would have wanted me to get out of East Texas under any circumstances. But because I was gay, it seemed doubly important to take me to Neiman's so I could learn to want more of everything. I think Mother considered homosexuality to be a form of aestheticism and believed that by taking me shopping, she was giving me a world where it would be easier to find my way than in the cowboy culture of Daddy's people. To Mother, Neiman Marcus was gay school, which was why she was willing to fight with Daddy every weekend when he wanted to take me with him to the Navasota Saturday morning live cattle auction. Daddy's concern for me had developed early. By the time I could talk, he was correcting Mother when she brushed my hair and called me her beautiful little boy. A boy isn't beautiful, Jessica, insisted my father. He's handsome.
A boy might be handsome,
Mother answered,
but my son is gorgeous.
It will be so great if you just die. Think of all the things that
I could buy. I could cash that check if you just break your neck. Every day I pray for your demise. God must be my hitman for the kill. Make it quick and do not change your will. Don't want you to linger, I'm crossing my fingers, just as long as you get deathly ill.
This has been a visit with Robert Lowe and his mother Jessica Wilson. His book, The Memoirs of a Beautiful Boy, is from St. Martin's Press. This song was written by his mom as a tribute to her in-laws. This is Steve Pride. Thanks for listening.
Folks die every day, oh, why can't you? It would be my one dream that came true. Oh, please hear my prayer, get eaten by a bear, or have a coronary, or have that Harry Carey. It's you I want to bury, I'll call the mortuary. It would be so great if you just die. It would be so great if you just die. It would be so great if you just die.
Thanks for choosing This Way Out, the international gay and lesbian radio magazine. This week, Bridget Strong, Lee Moore, Rex Walker with Bill Kelly, and Steve Pride contributed program material. Charlie Rich and Nadia Ackerman performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. Listen online to This Way Out exclusively at outinamerica.com. You can also click on the link at the top of our website, thiswayout.org. This Way Out operating expenses are underwritten by a grant from the Gay Chemists Support Fund of the Horizons Foundation and through direct charitable donations from our listeners. We thank you. Please log on to thiswayout.org to see how you can help keep this program on the air. Email us at tworadio@aol.com or write to P.O. Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and everyone at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening on 2TLC, Yamba, New South Wales, WRPI, Troy, New York, KRCL, Salt Lake City, Utah, and more than 150 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Do stay tuned.
This Way Out is heard every week as part of Queer Voices. You are listening to 90.1 FM KPFT.
They did one on National Public Radio, I think, a week ago, and it was pretty good. But this Steve Pride was even better.
Oh, that was so good.
And I think the Neimans they were talking about was here in Houston.
Yes. Well, they gave it away from Navasota. They're driving down here. Absolutely, it was the Neimans here.
Yeah.
I don't think it was in Dallas.
Well, that's the original Neimfas.
Neimfas?
Oh, I'm sorry. I have Mexican food on the mind.
Oh, you must be hungry. Yeah.
I am hungry.
No, but it's got to be the Neimans here. I mean, even if it's not, we're going to claim it.
Well, and I had sent information to Joan on this book, and I was hoping she'd do it, but Steve Pride did a great job on that.
Oh.
Steve Pride has a website. It's called Pride on Screen. He does a lot of stuff about movies for This Way Out. And his website talks about movies with either gay themes or characters or written by type, sort of like, somewhat like J.D. Doyle does on music.
Yeah, and on Queer Music Heritage, which is the second hour next week here on Queer Voices. One of the other things, that there's GLAAD, you know, does a lot of that reporting on the gay characters and GLBT characters in many of the shows. So it's, you know, of course, with the writer's strike, everything just sort of dropped off the radar.
Well, it's interesting you talked about GLAAD. They have award shows that they have, I guess, I think it's in New York, San Francisco, and Los Angeles. And Bravo is going to be broadcasting them. And I think coming up rather soon.
Oh, that'd be great. I'd enjoy watching that and catching up on it. I know, speaking of such, the L Word is going to have its last season when the new season comes back. It'll be their last. I guess they'll have to pull all the stories together in the end.
I guess sort of like they did for Queer as Folk.
Yeah.
which was that. And then, you know, another show that I didn't really watch at all, but I heard a lot about on public radio was The Wire, which was a show about Baltimore and sort of what goes on in some of the neighborhoods where drugs, you know, are prevalent.
Oh, yeah.
And the newspaper that covers it, really. And somebody was talking about that recently, that, you know, the networks pretty much gave up on miniseries. It's now all on pay television networks.
Right. Well, if you see some of them, most of the shows now, well, I won't say most of them, but a great number are episodic. You know, there's this continuing, they have that ensemble cast that goes from show to show, and you know, one show carries into the next one with some storyline. And instead of a miniseries, you know, the whole series is that.
Right, right. Are you talking about like Desperate Housewives?
Desperate Housewives.
Well, you kind of have to watch one, but you could kind of start and kind of pick up the pieces in the context.
Well, they give you enough information at the beginning to get it on. I've been waiting for, you know, Dirty Rotten Money to come back.
That's a good one.
Yes.
Yeah, I enjoyed that. Well,
no,
you know, it has a trans...
We have one of the first...
Breaking ground history.
Breaking ground, a transgender, actually playing a transgender.
I know.
It's rather earth-shattering to have
She's very
that.
Beautiful.
Yes, she is. I've met her before.
Oh, really?
Yes.
There's a daytime soap opera that has two teenage gay characters.
Oh, really?
Don't know which one it was because I've seen a few things, maybe like Days for Your... Yeah. I don't know, one of them.
Well, the one, you know, All My Children with having Zoe transition on the show and made a big difference in a lot of people. They saw the inside and they were very careful to make it real, the circumstances and the hardships and the things that Zoe had to go through in her transition. And I'm on a personal basis for myself, it made it possible for one of my sisters to understand something about myself, to the point where we started talking again this last Christmas after 9 years. And so thanks, Carla.
and that sort of talks,
you know, but the reason of the follow through, it made it possible for in my own personal life, for my family to see this and understand what was really going on, to make it possible to open dialogue again.
And the mass media has brought up some of these subjects that people out in the middle of nowhere, or some people even in the suburbs, don't necessarily even talk about it. Like Will and Grace was not a very good show, but it's just sort of did open up some of the dialogue.
Well, a lot of series, like I call it the Queer as Folk effect, where there was like no gay series, and then all of a sudden Queer as Folk came out and broke doors down, and the younger generation has completely embraced it. And, you know, coming out is not as big of a deal as it was in my day or...
Now, Jack, you mentioned the soap opera. I looked it up on Google. It's As the World Turns. And I remember reading an article about that a couple of weeks ago online, where sometime around Christmas, you know, with the whole mistletoe thing, they were almost going to show the two young characters kissing, and they just panned up to the mistletoe at the point where would have happened. And apparently the viewers have been calling in and writing in. They want to see some action.
Good for them.
Yeah.
I love it.
Do y'all get the logo channel?
I don't. Yes, and at first, well, today I actually sat and watched the CBS News on Logo.
I love CBS News on Logo.
I'm going to start recording that so I can watch that.
Well, there's a show on there called The Trans-American Love Story, and it's kind of a dating show, but they have I forget her name. I think it's Calpurnia.
Yeah, Calpurnia Adams.
Yeah, she's the star, and, you know, she has all these suitors that are, you know, vying for her attention on the show. And you know, you need to check it out. It's really
good. Well, I can't get a logo. I don't have logo on my cable.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Well, you know, my point is that I think the transgendered community is now seeing kind of this birth, this renaissance, and kind of this more visibility in the media.
Well, the interesting thing is, with the transgender community, a lot of younger people already are familiar with transgender. They're familiar with the term, familiar with what it means. Sometimes they get it wrong, but you know what? It's easy to say, and they're not shocked by it when some of their friends come out and say, well, I want to be a girl, or I want to be a boy.
Right. Right.
And in the past, it may have been that you had a tomboy, you know, the girl being very boyish. But now, you know, she may recognize the fact that I really want to be a boy.
Right.
And they have the opportunity to at least express themselves.
where it's, you know, not closed off. But there's a lot of shows that I've seen over the, at least in the last 3 to 4 years, where there's that, one of my favorites is One Tree Hill on CW. Mm-hmm. And they have the characters. It's about kids going through high school, and now right. they're out of college and adults, young adults. But they're, you know, what would be two straight women getting together. This is something that you don't see, but it's become acceptable to see that and to show it on TV, in which, hey, that's great. People are getting a taste and understand what's going on.
A lot of problems with the mass media of what they show and low common denominator and all that stuff, but there has been a lot more openness in movies, especially almost, you know, a lot more movies have gay, lesbian, or transgender characters.
Absolutely.
As just part of the mix.
Yes, it's just part of the regular cast. It's not something unusual. It's not like it was there. I enjoy Torchwood on BBC.
Oh, I love that
I just
show.
Love it. And you know, they're all a little bit GLBT,
right?
Or B at least.
And there's a movie called Celluloid Closet.
I was going to mention that. How?
And I think that's going to be on Logo in the next day or so.
Well, Logo tends to repeat a lot of their shows.
Yeah, because that's just the way it is.
The thing about the Celluloid Closet is it shows how gays and the gay characters were always the enemy or the bad guy back
yes.
in the day. And they were
yes.
always the villain. You know, the gay
yes.
guy is the one to get. You know, he's the evil one.
Well, Boys in the Band was like one of the first
right,
movies.
Right.
It was one of the first, I guess, plays on I don't know if it made Broadway or off Broadway back in the 70s, mm-hmm. early 70s.
Yeah.
And then they made a movie out of it, and it's rather tragic in the end of how they all tear each other apart, in a sense. But it was, and I actually remember reading the New York Times and seeing the ads for that movie in there, because that was controversial that they'd be buying ads in the arts and leisure section.
Well, I thought it was interesting, you know, that the deal with, speaking of such, with Ford and their advertising, that the boycott supposedly worked, but yet Ford is not going directly at...
And the boycott you're talking about was the religious right.
The religious right.
Were against Ford for advertising.
For advertising in GLBT magazines and media. And they claimed victory. However, all Ford did was reroute its advertising, and they're still doing as much. Also, there was a very interesting article on the internet about Obama and Hillary running advertising especially in Philadelphia, especially directly to the GLBT community.
Well, there's a
community.
Full-page ad in Outsmart this month for,
yep,
unfortunately,
Obama.
It came out a little bit late for the election, but it was a beautiful ad for Obama in Outsmart.
Absolutely.
On Obama's website, there's a GLBT section where you can kind of go and join groups. And
I believe there's also one for Hillary Clinton. There's a GLBT.
It's very refreshing to see the Democratic candidates reaching out and just...
I bet that there's not one on McCain's website.
Listeners out there, go check it out.
Go check out McCain's out. And
if you
look
find
for it. And if you find it, let us know. And if you
Google.
Don't find it, send them a little note saying you're looking for it, and would they please get it ready for you. I
Google,
think we should challenge you.
Google McCain GLBT. Zero results, I'm sure.
But send them a little note asking them that you're looking for his positions on GLBT issues. I think it'd be very important for all of you.
Well, and certainly the political caucus interviewed both Obama and Hillary for consideration endorsements. And certainly we'd be very interested in talking to McCain for consideration of endorsements.
Consideration for endorsements coming up.
So there's another round of endorsements after the primaries?
Yes. Well,
yes and no.
Yes and no.
The way the policy is that if in the primaries you were endorsed by the caucus and you won the primary, you're automatically covered in the fall.
Okay.
But anyone that is different...
But the Republican still has the opportunity
to
screen.
If they didn't choose to screen in the past.
Oh.
So...
Well, there's the challenge. Yeah.
That's it. Thanks, everybody. We enjoyed it. There's some...
Yeah, that's the shut-up music.
Oh, well, I'm supposed to shut up. Well,
that's the Academy Award.
Shut
down music. Yeah.
No, that's the music that means that it's Time to thank our guests.
Thanks, everybody.
Well, tonight whoever you were.
We had Billy Underwood, the vice president of Bayou City Boys Club, talking about Jungle Party, which is this weekend, junglehouston.com.
And Joan Devlin led off the show, talking with Nancy Polakoff about Beyond Gay and Straight Marriage, Valuing All Families Under the Law, which is a book that she wrote recently. And on next week's show, we're going to have the Gay Men's Chorus of Houston. They have a performance coming up March 31st. They're going to be performing the Flyboys of Flag Troop Houston at Jones Hall. And then also J.D. Doyle will be interviewing Ron Morris, who will be in town performing at Mojo Rising the following Thursday night. And then in the second hour, it will be J.D. Doyle's Queer Music Heritage. And he'll be looking at Horse McDonald and Alicia Bridges and talking with those two artists. You have been listening to Queer Voices, heard each Monday at 8 p.m. here on KPFT, a publicly funded Pacifica Network station. Queer Voices is produced live in Houston with recorded segments from This Way Out, which is produced at KPFK in Los Angeles. Queer Voices executive producer is Jack Valensky. On-air voices are Glenn Holt, J.D. Doyle, Deborah Bell, Jennifer Renee, Greg Chapman, and Jack Valensky. Be sure to listen every Saturday night, Sunday morning at 1 a.m. for After Hours with Jimmy Carper. It's Queer Radio with Attitude. This is listener-sponsored and commercial-free Pacifica Radio, KPFT, at 90.1 FM, 89.5 FM Galveston, and worldwide via streaming audio from kpft.org. For Queer Voices, I'm Glenn Holt.
Award-winning, best-selling author Jim Hightower is described as America's most popular populist. He's releasing his book, Swim Against the Current, Even a Dead Fish Can Go with the Flow, live and in person at Landmark's River Oaks Theater in a benefit for KPFT on Wednesday, March 19th at 7 p.m. To purchase tickets, visit kpft.org or call us at 713-526-4000. Prices are $10 in advance, $15 at the door, $5 for students with photo ID. Also, if you'd like a chance to speak with Jim personally, $150 will get you entrance to a private meet and greet event with Jim running from 6 to 7 p.m. just before the evening's activities, and that includes an autographed book, appetizers, and preferred seating at the book.
The free program you just heard was paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a KPFT member, we encourage you to join with us in keeping free speech alive by becoming one. Basic membership is still $35 a year. You don't have to, but you'll feel better. Thanks for listening.